present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello, and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the Evesham Almanac, read by Peter Donaldson.
Wychhaven's civic leaders are flushed with pride after their public toilets were called the best in the region by the British Toilet Association. The judges were particularly impressed by the way both parties on the council regularly sat down together.
Thanks to the anonymous Wychhaven public toilet user who sent that one in. Let's meet the teams. Please welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Mark Steele. Facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Andy Hamilton. Francis, the traditional easiest question. Who's winning the war?
Well, traditionally, the most important story of the week is the first question. So I assumed it would be those nice pictures of Catherine Zeta-Jones. That was a very big story. A whole page in the Daily Mail home news page was given over to the news that Catherine Zeta-Jones is looking awfully well at the moment. But if it's not that, then I suppose it's something that happened since the last news quiz, which is that the British government is now at war against the common enemy, Kate Adey. And Downing Street accused her of jeopardising Tony Blair's security or something, and she has now hired lawyers and is threatening to sue Number 10 for libel. Downing Street, I think, then opened a second front by attacking the whole of the press, because Blair went off to Oman in his
You're not allowed to say that.
Combat pants.
You've given everything away now.
Now you've been there, I think you can.
Because Bin Laden listens to the news quiz.
Yes.
Well, he got a big audience because they thought it was going to be Jerry Halliwell again, but they got Blair instead. And while he was there, he was having curry with these soldiers in their tent, and he said that one of his sons was interested in going into the armed forces. And this was put on the wires and on the newspapers. And immediately Downing Street issued a kind of banning order, or tried to, saying this was a great breach of security and mustn't be reported. As if, Osama bin Laden is thinking, aha, I've got him now, one of his sons. I'll wait until he joins the army and then I'll get him. It could be Leo, for all we know. He's going to have a bloody long wait. But anyway, in the meantime, when they're not fighting the media, they're bombing Afghanistan. And the trouble is, there isn't anything to bomb there. Cause 20 years of war. And going on television saying, rather grumpily, this is not a target-rich environment. And it is as if the Afghans have been cheating, not really playing the game, by having already had the country destroyed before the bombing started, so there was nothing left to bomb. So it's not very sporting of them, but there we are. So they're doing the best they can, producing these exciting satellite photos with marked before and after.
They're brilliant. Before, a pile of dust. After, a pile of dust, showing that we're having an impact.
I love the way the press gets so outraged about the other side taking part. So Bin Laden does his video, and there was one headline in one of the papers, defiant, outrageous, because he was defiant. What did they expect him to do in this video? Did they expect him to do a video where he just went, oh, sorry? The other thing was that the fact that he said that he supported the attacks in New York, everyone says, well, this proves that he did it. But of course, there is a difference between supporting something and doing it, isn't there? Otherwise, you'd have people all this week would have been going up to fat, sweaty, wheezy England supporters going, that was a fantastic free kick you scored in injury time, mate. There is a difference.
I've worked out how to solve this whole global crisis. Seems to me the problem is extremists. Extremists have an advantage over moderates in that they're prepared to be extreme and go to terrible lengths. And what I think we moderates have to do is become more extreme and form an extremist moderate coalition, arm ourselves with nuclear weapons, and say, if you mad people don't stop fighting, we're going to blow everything up. I can't see how that would fail.
They have done that a bit, haven't they? Because they were scurrying around looking for someone to support the Americans, and they didn't know who to back, really. And it seems to me that they've picked the Northern Alliance because the Americans think it's a building society. I think they're probably thinking, well, now they've frozen Bin Laden's assets, you see, now he'll be getting a call from a call centre in Newcastle. Every morning at 8:15 with a woman going, hello, Mr. Bin Laden, it's Tina here from the Northern Alliance. I'm afraid we're going to need you to make a payment. That'll smoke him out. And the king, they get this 86-year-old king, which I think is the sort of forward planning that has been lacking in the region, really. And the only thing is, if he does end up taking over Afghanistan, he'll be the only person of that age anywhere in the world who walks through completely flat areas going, do you know, when I was a kid, it was all buildings around here.
I just want to say I'm not going to make any jokes about the war until I know how it's going to come out. I could end up doing the news quiz from Kabul in 40 years' time when I shall still need the money, so I don't think I'm not choosing one side or the other. I think they're both equally wonderful.
That might be the answer, you know. I bet the Taliban don't face humour very often. And that might be the answer. Take the news quiz.
Neither do our audience.
Five minutes of Julian Clary, they'd be saying, we can't fight this sort of thing. Down would go the guns.
Due to lack of other news this week, we thought we'd bring you an episode of News Quiz Gold. So, here's a question from 10 years ago. How's George Bush doing in his war against the Arabs? Mark, listen to this. Mark, conservatively speaking, whose speech wasn't exactly A-OK.
Oh, yes, you're a man who must be infuriating for poor Francis, who keeps getting various columnists and newspapers that have... Oh, no, how are we going to fill it? I know, we'll make the original insight that Francis looks a bit like the new Conservative leader, Ian Duncan Smith, who made the... Sadly, I did watch a bit of this speech, and it was fantastic, because it was so bumbling. And he reminded me a bit of, like, the president of a bowls club, who has to sort of suddenly get up and say something. And it was very much sort of, well, thank you for being at Blackpool, and it's good to be leading you here with us, Prime, as leader of the supposition, opposition. And they all sort of clapped in the right places. I did think, actually, if his speech was a radio programme, at the end the producer would have come on and said, I'm afraid there will be rather a lot of retakes.
I watched it, and it didn't bother me, really, because I got used to the fact that Ian Duncan Smith looks like Francis. But I was suddenly struck when Ankrum was talking, he's a spitting image of Richard Whiteley. except less smart. And I thought, if I were a Conservative, would I actually want this? To go in there with Francis Weed and Richard Whiteley and try and win an election.
But he said he was trying to be new, old Duncan Smith, in spite of this terrible frog in his throat, because he said that they wanted to reach out to women and ethnic minorities and people of different lifestyles. Mm. Whoever they are, people of different hairstyles is what they really need. but also, you know, there's a lot of stuff about inclusiveness, and you know, it's all Portillo-ish, really. And why they went to the bother of not electing Portillo when they're going to get Duncan Smith turning into Portillo, I can't imagine. I dread to think what revelations are about to come out. but also, they did try that inclusiveness. They even, if you remember, the old Tories, the last lot, tried including people from a different planet, like Anne Widdecombe and John Wesley. Don't actually know
that. I actually didn't think the BBC should have screened it. I thought at a time when national morale is very low and depressed, because there was so much scary news this week, but easily the scariest bit was the compassionate Michael Howard. I mean, he's always been pretty scary. I mean, even Anne Widdecombe thought he was scary. But I thought the moment where he said that he really hoped that the Conservatives would get a black Prime Minister into number 10, well, I thought, you fibber. If I'm honest, it was a great moment.
During his speech, IDS spoke of the need to attract more women to the party, at which point Steve Norris leapt to his feet and gave him his address book. Andy, why is bad news just what the doctor ordered?
Oh, my goodness. Is this anything to do with the spin doctor lady?
It is.
Oh, right. Where's the doctor bit in that, then?
Spin doctor.
Oh, right. Which
bit of the phrase spin doctor has got the word doctor in it, Knight?
Thank you for your help. Well, I'm prepared to bet that on the day of those horrific events of September the 11th, there weren't many emails sent that began with the words, this is a good day. Because most of us watched it in horror, and saw this dreadful tragedy unfolding, but there was a lady working for the Minister for Transport who saw it as a professional opportunity, a career challenge, and she sent out an email saying this would be a good day for sneaking out any bad news. And she has issued an apology, but she has said she was wrong to send the email. And that is the Jeffrey Archer use of the word wrong, which means it was wrong of me to get caught. Of course, what was wrong was to think the thought that moved her fingers on the keyboard to send the email. Anyway, for a government that's always accusing people in the media of cynicism, it was about as off the scale as you can get. I think even Peter Mandelson might have blunched at that one.
Blunched?
Blunched, yes. Men who blunch.
Yes, I think these spin doctors... See, this woman was trained to be like that. She was just doing her job. She's trained to have no sense or emotion or humanity at all. And to sit there like one of these sort of science fiction robots that's usually played by Arnie Schwarzenegger in a film, thinking, today my job is to get out the councillor expenses story. And then she'll have seen the terrible thing on the television and thought, that gives me an idea. That's the way they think, these people.
And of all the things to want to... well, she actually said bury, not sneak out. She said we can bury these stories.
Yeah.
And the only one she mentioned, as you say, was councillor's expenses. So she's sitting there watching New York being destroyed before her eyes and, you know, people falling from skyscrapers and things. And it wasn't even as if it was some, you know, mega story. She thought, oh, great, you know, Gordon Brown's been caught shoplifting in Tesco. We can bury it. Councillor's expenses, the mindset that thinks, oh, councillor's expenses, as she's watching all this unfolding on the telly. But Stephen Byers is standing shoulder to shoulder with her. He won't sack her, will he? It's amazing.
I just wonder whether she did it. I mean, you could wake up one morning and if you knew enough pilots and had enough aircraft and he really wanted to bury councillor's expenses.
Stephen, I've had this terrific idea.
Well, there's no doubt that Stephen Byers is in charge of an evil network. It's called Railtrack.
Joe Moore's career in public relations is now in severe jeopardy. The Labour Party are reportedly keen to replace her with a more diplomatic PR figure, Sophie Rees-Jones. 2 points. Alan, who reached the end of the line after failing to spot they'd passed too many red signals?
We've done it 3 times already, because we've done
it.
Yes. It's Railtrack.
Yes.
There's probably a large blackboard somewhere with chalk on it telling us what Railtrack are actually going to do about the collapse of their £9 billion operation. Due to having the wrong wankers on the line or whatever it was. But anyway, that's what it is. It's another disaster.
Government has controversially frozen £350 million of Railtrack money held in a London bank account, making them the second terror organisation to be treated this way. Mark, why is David Beckham planning a career move?
Oh, right, yeah, oh, you and your Radio 4 puns. Yes, because he scored a goal in about 2 minutes into injury time that sort of bent at about a 70-degree angle and means that England are definitely through to the World Cup finals, which will take place next year in Japan and South Korea. Hence Korea, for the listeners that didn't get the link.
Oh, yes.
Just as well it's not North Korea. I've been to North Korea. Which is run by this amazing character called Kim Jong-il, the son of Kim Il-sung. And when I was there, they showed me that they just opened the first golf course in North Korea. And they said, of course, the dear leader, Kim Jong-il, opened it. And he had never played golf before in his life. And he drove from the first tee. And would you believe it, he got a hole in one. I said, well, that is fantastic. It's amazing. And then we went to a bowling alley, which they'd opened for the top party people, the apparatchiks. And I said, don't tell me, did he knock all 10 skittles? Yes, he did, funnily enough. No doubt, if we played the World Cup in North Korea, even Beckham couldn't really compete with the talented right foot of old Kim Jong-il. So it was a very moving moment. Even you.
Beckham, yeah.
Hardened old cynic that you are must have wept a bit at that.
I did also think it was quite funny when the Greeks got the second goal, I have to say, but that's...
God, it's like being under Dog and Ferret. Would you like to put on to Penigan?
I think Francis is being very cynical about the president of North Korea. Why can't the man be just a good sporting all-rounder? That's just, you know, you see conspiracy everywhere you go. I don't know if you remember, there was a famous documentary about Idi Amin, where Idi Amin won the swimming race against his generals, and you have never seen grown men try to swim more slowly, because Idi Amin was the kind of swimmer that when he got in, the water got out. You know, he had no technique at all. And
Mao Zedong, apparently, the Chinese said that Mao Zedong swung the Yangtze River four times quicker than anyone else had ever done it. The whole of it, lengthways, this is. Not 860 miles.
But that's what great leaders do, isn't it? I mean, if only Tony Blair would break the world 100 metres record, then we could hold our heads high.
David Beckham's equalising goal in the 93rd minute of the match against Greece was the third fantastic result for England since Kevin Keegan's dramatic resignation. Or the fourth fantastic result if you include Kevin's dramatic resignation. Andy, which latest his and hers accessory won't be hard to swallow?
Give me the question again. I was distracted. You know how easily I get distracted by my doodling, Simon. I've told you, never give me a question while I'm doodling.
I'm jolly glad you didn't doodle the answer to this one.
What is it?
Andy,
it's about shagging, Andy.
Do it again. Give me the answer.
Well, he's just given you the answer. Andy, which latest his and hers accessory won't be hard to swallow?
Is it a pill?
No, it's a dildo. What do you think it is? Of course it's a pill. It's a thing that women and men shove into one another in order to stop having babies, contrary to the normal practice. You've heard about this?
Oh, I've heard about sex, yeah. But the story,
There is a new contraceptive pill about to come. There's always a new contraceptive pill come on the market. You can take this one 7 years later, and the children that were born just keel over and die. No, you take it a certain time. You take it about 9 years old, and it lasts till you're 200.
But men take it. That's the point.
Can you?
I know that.
You didn't say that.
We know they exist for women, I'm told.
But there are already
blokes contraceptive pills.
It changes the sperm swimming pattern.
Stops them swimming altogether, they end up like Idi Amin. It changes the direction of the sperm, so it swims the other way. It's jolly fame if you're a bloke. But they interfere genetically with it. They muck about with it.
You know, you're making this sound really attractive, I bet. I bet the manufacturers of this pill are going, oh, thanks a bunch, Alan. I'm not sure I want my sperm swimming the wrong way. Where would they stop?
Well, exactly. Wake up with a sore throat, you know.
That's the Ian Duncan Smith problem.
It'll never catch on. I'm prepared. It'll never work. They probably haven't tested it properly yet. Have they tested it? I mean, is it on sale?
No.
Of course not.
It will be.
Well, it's a reasonable question, Francis. Of course not.
It's just that there's a war on, and they're desperately looking around, as they do in the silly season of summer, but for different reasons, for any dodgy bit of scientific research that they can fill those tiny little news in brief columns on page 28 with, the only little non-war bit.
Mm. And Mind you, we just filled 10 minutes of the news.
And so
American scientists are developing what they claim is a unisex contraceptive pill that can be taken by either the man or the woman just before sex. It could be the biggest breakthrough in contraceptives since lager. Work on the pill has arisen out of recent experiments in IVF, or Ian Duncan Smith, as it's called. Alan, your piece of music. Which company have offered up their thanks to St. Michael?
If it had been the only way is up and it had been about the sperm, I would have understood the question far better. I hoped it was going to be the one about the Surrey Police and the Elvis Presley lookalikes, but it clearly isn't. I think it's about Marks and Spencer's. They've saw one more pair of pants and everybody's doing cartwheels in the street. Having plummeted to the bottom of wherever pants go, it's now turned around and it's made a couple of bob, and we're supposed to be extremely excited.
What was the story about the Elvis lookalikes?
Oh, it's great. It's in the Telegraph on Wednesday. It said, Surrey Police, they want a line-up. They're looking for 8 Elvis lookalikes. And I couldn't work out how you would do this, because if they've got an alleged villain who looks a bit like Elvis, how do they know how much like Elvis he looks to go and get the other lookalikes to look like him? So I never see an Elvis lookalike that look like Elvis. And if they get 8 lookalikes that look more like Elvis, he won't look anything like the bloke they've got.
But it had nothing to do with Marks and Spencers. I just thought it was a question that would come up.
After 3 years of falling sales, Marks and Spencers reports that this quarter there's been an increase. Certainly over the past 4 weeks, there's been a huge rise in the sale of brown underpants.
Oh.
Francis, why is it not just inside the Commons that the eyes have it?
This isn't that thing about attraction, when yes. you see attractive people.
I think me and Alan better answer this question.
Well, we just
it's about
answered
sexual
it,
attractiveness.
Yes, and it's... Well, in fact, it is exactly as we sit here now, facing each other across a crowded room. They've spent a fortune at UCL discovering that if you're at a party and you see an attractive person across the room, your brain gets excited and starts fizzing. Yes. And you look at this person and, you know, you may well... Your brain says, go on, in there. And off you go. Whereas if you see a very unattractive person across the room, your brain says, nah, nah, and you look elsewhere.
Oh, is that what happens?
It's taken a long time to find out. It's absolutely fascinating. And I don't know how we managed all these years without knowing this.
I was very taken with your description of your brain saying, oh, come on, get in there, Francis. Can I ask, have you pulled at parties very often? I love that. Oh, go on.
Oh, the old get-in-there line never failed.
Scientists.
Excuse me, I wouldn't come over, but it's my brain, you see. It's forcing me to. That was a story, but anyway, it said to get in there, so... does that work?
No, very good line, but I'd like you to know my sperms go backwards. Always a winner.
Scientists working at University College London say that love at first sight is in fact an activity boost in the brain's ventral striatum. So we're looking forward to seeing Barry White incorporate that into a lyric. Andy, listen to this. Theme from Return of the Jedi. Andy, why will it now make sense for us all to follow the gospel according to Luke?
You told me that was Elgar. Don't help me.
Do you know this? You know this?
Yes, I think I do.
Yeah, I think you would.
It is to do with people adopting Star Wars. Oh, they're putting on the census forms next to religion, they're putting Jedi and stuff like that. Because it's fun irritating people who do the census for.
Yeah.
It's just been given a number, isn't it? That's all they're saying. They haven't actually recognised it as an official religion.
I hope they don't. I mean, supposing they're fundamentalists, those long poles are light on the end. You wouldn't want to go up against them with a tomahawk.
Maybe they will split. There'll be a moderate wing and a fundamentalist wing, and Blair will say, it's not a war against the whole of Jedi, which is a peace-loving religion. Just Darth Vader, that's all.
If it is a religion, are we allowed to heap abuse on it, though? Because David
Blunt... Not anymore, no.
He's introducing legislation making it, you know, illegal to abuse religion. I'd do it slightly differently. I'd make it compulsory to abuse religions, I think, on the basis that the one thing that everybody shares in this madness is a belief that God's on their side.
There's never, as far as I know, there's never been a case of a general saying, last night I spoke to God in this hour of need, and unfortunately it seems he's backing the Turks on this one. As if we're on our own, I'm afraid.
But similarly, no one has ever, you know, it seems to me that no agnostics ever go to war. I mean, no one ever marches behind the banner of mild conjecture. People who doubt things are harmless. People who are certain about things are dangerous. It seems to be a simple rule in life.
Following an email campaign by Star Wars fans, Jedi Knight is now listed alongside better-known religions in the results of the 2001 official census form, proving that the geek shall inherit the earth.
Hey.
After being told of this news, the Archbishop of Canterbury hit back, announcing that from Sunday all his sermons will be delivered in 70mm Dolby surround sound. Before we reveal the final scores, we'll hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
This is from Metro, that free newspaper that they give out at some of the stations. Police foiled an attempted bank raid yesterday after a robber told staff he would come back to collect his money. Flying squad officers pounced when the man returned 7 hours later to pick up the cash.
Detective Superintendent John Shatford said, "This operation should serve as a warning to anyone thinking of committing a robbery in this way. The flying squad is extremely skilled in dealing with this type of incident and can respond quickly, as this operation shows."
Mark.
Dorset farmer Roger Yeoman had a shock when he received a parking ticket for his tractor, particularly as it said he'd parked it in a North London street. Mr. Yeoman has never been to West Hampstead and says that to get there would have taken him 3 days to drive at the tractor's top speed of 17 miles an hour. But Camden Council spent 4 months insisting that a warden had seen the vehicle and demanded payment of a £60 fine. I sent them a sarcastic letter asking them to ask the traffic warden whether he could remember climbing up onto my dirty tractor to put the ticket on the windscreen. The matter was finally resolved when Camden Council eventually accepted that there were no ploughed fields in the area.
Andy.
Well, this is from Diane Ward of Stoke-on-Church, and it appealed to me because in these worrying times, I think this is a definite example of somebody worrying too much. Regarding the ongoing saga of the seagulls in Liskard, my daughter put a cooked chicken on the draining board to cook and her phone rang. She answered it, and when she was going back to the kitchen, she heard a noise. She saw a seagull pecking at the chicken on the draining board. She screamed at it, and as she did, the seagull pushed its head in the cavity of the chicken and then flew off with the chicken on its head. So, now, with things like this happening, is it not time something was done about these vermin? If she hadn't come in when she did, it might have flown off, and they could have eaten that chicken, not knowing that the seagull had been at it.
Alan.
This cutting was sent to me, Simon, by Peter Donaldson of Portland Place. It says, a Radio 5 Live reporter sent to cover the retrial of the Leeds United footballers in Hull was parking near the court when he was approached by the car park attendant. I suppose you're a journalist, said the attendant. How did you guess? Asked the reporter, impressed by the man's observational skills. To which the attendant replied, we don't wear sunglasses in Hull.
Thank you all. Let's look at the final score. And fittingly, at a time of national and international crisis, the teams are each standing shoulder to shoulder with 12 points each. Before we leave you, here's an extract from Public Transport Timetable sent in by Tony Osborne.
How do I catch my bus? You can catch your bus at any local bus stops or bus stations. It is best to arrive at the stop before the bus is due.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Queen, Mark Steele, Andy Hamilton and Alan Corran. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news is read by me, Peter Donaldson. The chairman's script was written by Debbie Barham, Dave Cohen, Tom Jameson and Paul McKenzie. And the producer was Lucy Armitage.